Dear Venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today is the second day of our 190th retreat. It is the time for the question and answer or common interviews. We'll invite Lakshmi to start the session with the written questions, and then as time permits, we will make it open discussion after the written questions are finished.
Thank you, Venerable sir. We have 5 questions today, 3 on meditation and 2 on the Dhamma. Venerable Swami Mahansa, I am a novice to the meditation practice and have only recently started, hence was hesitant to put my thoughts forward to you. However, since yesterday you elaborated on the importance of attempting to put our experience of meditation down in words, I am making my first attempt to report mine. Please forgive me in advance, therefore, for any lapses, and also if this description is rather lengthy. Sitting meditation. Personally for me, walking meditation proves easier than sitting, as sitting meditation firstly makes drowsiness, sleepiness arrive faster, and secondly creates a back pain which I have had for a few years now. Question. Should I for now focus more on walking as it works better for me, or attempt to stay longer in the sitting posture in order to train myself better for this? That being said,
so we'll go by one by one, otherwise I will forget the early part of the statement. So they are, if that particular person is happy to present, I would like to know, before pain started, before drowsiness sets in, how do you know, and what is your experience of just sitting and waiting? How do you know you are not walking, I am sitting? And what is the experience of sitting before these all complaints? That will give a very nice healthy start, and that is not been mentioned. If it is available, that will be a very, very positive way of presenting the meditation report. If the person is not happy to present, we will proceed.
I encourage the person to come forward, please.
Never mind, being a beginner, we will give this privilege not to come to the court.
Okay. That being said, I found something remarkable in line with something that you mentioned in an audio clip on our first day. In sitting meditation, the body actually becomes like a solid pyramid, with the lower half acting after a point like a stationary base. The focus shifts to the upper half of the torso, with the rise and fall of chest and breath on the nose's tip feeling like the only working points. Apart from periodic pains, the lower half of the body feels detached, almost non-existent. The next part is on walking meditation. Shall I continue?
So this is the part I just wanted to ask, but it is luckily it is written. So when you assume the sitting posture, it is like a pyramid in shape, or like an ant hill, or like a dagaba you find in the Buddhist temples. And that is the way, that's why we keep the statue of the Buddha. And we had the tsunami in 2006, not a single statue broken, tsunami, because the sea waves can't break it, rain can't break it, wind can't break it. This is the most solid architectural mode, pyramid. So when you are sitting, assuming the posture of the pyramid, it is self-maintained. And the lower part will give the anchorage, the upper part is just relaxing. And you verily mentioned the active process is happening on the upper part of the body, that is air movement, expansion, contraction. So, I don't know what is the latter part of it. In walking, upper part is solid, lower part is walking. So, these things indicates upper part is the air element, lower part is some earth element. From sitting to walking, the posture changes, activity changes, up and down. So this is the way the walking, the meditation session become balanced. You get different kinds of exercises, postures, so it must be balanced. Then you must feel it, and that feeling of comparison between the sitting and walking is a very pleasing one. Because otherwise you never consider your body. Any profession is leading to professional disharmony. Each and every profession never give a balanced exercise to the body. So in walking, in sitting, the body becomes completely balanced. So I am highlighting the upper part is working in the sitting and lower part is solid. In walking, upper part is solid, lower part is walking. And that is, these are the things you have to understand, and this is a reason to be glad and happy and loving kindness to your body. Otherwise, you are utterly torturing your body. Whole day, day and night, 7 days a week, 30 days a month, 365 days a year, and whole life. Unless otherwise, you just assume the sitting posture and humbly, in a relaxed way, in a balanced way, you be happy in the present moment. So, we'll see the walking part.
By contrast, in walking meditation, I feel the upper half, most of my body, as immobile and detached, while the only working parts seem to be the feet, sometimes sensation in calves and legs. The feet, soles, heels, toes, all feel very much alive and highly attuned to sensations. When walking on choir mats inside, I can focus on the distinct sensation of choir on the feet as it touches each part of the sole. Each step feels broken down into sections, with some sections merging. One foot begins its next step before the previous one has ended its last. There are sections of heel, middle and toes touching the ground in a cyclic pattern. Walking inside, I find mentally counting each step helps me maintain the mindfulness even when the mind drifts into thinking. My mind begins thinking of different thoughts, sometimes other than the walking process. But at the same time, I seem to know this. At points, I almost feel like an external observer watching my own mind. At times, it comes to a place where I know. I am conscious, both that my body is walking and that my mind is thinking thoughts at the same time. Venerable Sir, is this a possibility? Or in the split second that I am mindful of a thought, does that mean I am no longer focused on walking? Thiruvan Sarnai.
For the last part, when mind become more mindful, it become vigilant, it become diligent. In the modern English, it called the thin slicing of time. The time become not a chunky, it become thin slicing. At time it's a thought, next time in the breath, or in the leg, or sound, or thought. So you can see they are working together without any disharmony. Our rational mind finds, how come that? The thinking and walking happen simultaneously like. But you can see they are very thin slices of time appear together, but there's no mixing up each other. It's a cut and dry. Thinking mind and then observing mind of the leg and the listening mind and painful mind. They are awake maybe. So rational mind is messing it up. But in the process itself, no mess up. They know they are art. But our interpretation is utter foolish, utter idiots, utter ignorance, darkness. So the day you become efficient to appreciate the thin slicing of time, things are happening in very nice way. So multitasking is very simple. Whose mind is built up for that kind of a thing. Our rational mind is very dragging, is very, very inefficient. And that is why we are feeding to education. Never you can bring it up to the reality. So when you go there, you can see the seeing happens, smelling happens, hearing happens, other sensation happens, thinking happens, walking happens like. Keep on continuing. Don't doubt about that. But the times are, the slices are exclusively different. Only you, if you are foolish enough, if you are not skillful enough, you find reason to be worried. You will be entertaining doubts. But in reality, no doubts. Everything is cut and dry. So that is how you are increasing the efficiency of the mindfulness, vigilance of the mindfulness, immediacy of the mindfulness. Do you understand? In reality, no conflict. Only the conflict is in your interpretation, in your rationalization. But the children, no problem. They are not worrying about interpretation. So keep on with this idea in your mind, whether it is happening side by side, or one after the other, or two together. So these are the things the Buddha mentioned. You must know while walking, for an example, a thought happens. You can see walking is closer, thought is far away. Or sometimes thought is closer, walking is far away. Or sometimes thought and thinking, the walking and thinking experience, side by side. And out of that, walking is desirable, thinking is undesirable. At a time, thinking is desirable, walking is undesirable. At a time, this is gross, this is subtle, and vice versa. This is in, that is out. Likewise, there are many facets when two, three objects happening together. So, if you are a person expecting the theoretical perfection, you will worry about two objects that are together. But when you put into fight, then only you can see different facets of your primary object and the secondary object. You must be a mere distance observer. Don't worry, don't take responsibility about their performance. You have to just see and report. No room for worry. If you are not observing but expecting something, lot of room for worry. Don't. Day by day you will lose your expectation. Just observe. The good and bad live together. Black and white live together. Liking and disliking live together. Pleasure and pain live together. No problem. So continue to see, then the whole world is nothing but aesthetic. Very green, very lively, unless otherwise our foolish, rational mind going to interpret it. Through interpretation only you are going to grasp it. Let loose. You are not answerable. You have no any responsibility about giving an interpretation. But they will, moment they will go on by, whatever. So every contradictory thing can perform very nicely, very harmoniously in the broad screen. And go prepared, and you will see your innocence will come out. Your straightforwardness will come out. Your communication capacity, the superconductivity will come out. So don't hesitate or don't entertain doubts. Don't question them. Just let them happen. So simply you will be healed mentally and physically.
Venerable sir, the next question is in three parts. Part 1 on walking, part 2 on sitting, and part 3 on spiritual life. Walking meditation. The awareness is put on the soles of the feet. The contact with the choir mat or choir carpet is felt. Sometimes thoughts arise, mostly memories and projections. The thoughts are watched while the feet are in the background. Then the awareness comes back to the contact of the feet with the carpet. The longer the walking, the more details of the walking process arise. Sometimes there is the perception that the feet are made of light. Sitting meditation. The awareness is being put on the breath. It is labeled whether it is an in-breath or an out-breath, as well as whether it is a long breath or a short breath. After about 5 minutes, the labeling becomes to feel like a disturbance. So then just the bare breath is being watched. Details arise, like that the breath is most prominent at the back of the throat. Thoughts arise, are being become aware of and dissolve. A perception of light arises, sometimes circular, sometimes everywhere. Pain arises, is become aware of and dissolves into light. Sometimes it feels like the boundaries of the body disappear and dissolve into light. The breath is very subtle now and can only be felt through the movement of the belly. I'll read the question on the spiritual life after you have answered this.
Yeah, both the reports are good, very juicy, very sappy, feel like listening. So whenever, the second part I am talking, whenever you sit and meditate, whenever the breath happens or automatically happen even without noting, that means you are ready to put the machine into autopiloting. You are not interfering, even not noting. And then, if you observe it, you can see what happens to the breath, and slowly, slowly it becomes subtle. When it becomes subtle, your body, edge of the body, your boundaries of the bodies will dissolve. And you don't know which part in and which part out. The boundary between me and not me dissolves. And that is devastation for the people who have so much of idea about the corporeality and body and beautification and all the kind of thing. So this is a disastrous. But if you are a spiritual person, you can see while you are living, the me and not me boundary dissolves. Moment, at that moment, without any time gap, frustration dissolves, tension dissolves. So therefore, whether it is increase in tension or decrease in tension, that is your preparedness, your outlook of your mind, your attitude of the mind. So let it happen again and again. See where the point you can appreciate it, you can facilitate it, and you can consider this as a progress. And moment the boundary dissolves, language dissolves. You can't explain it. And egocentric idea dissolves. The materiality merge each other. And you get connected with the cosmic energy. No maintenance. So longer you be with that area, more you healed. More you massaged. Everything is cause and effect. There's no cursor. There's no doer. But very sharp observation. So that observation make you kind of a reflection or radical reflection. Wherever you do something, it is evil. Any ill will is evil, according to the Arthur Schopenhauer, according to Friedrich Nietzsche. So if you let the thing happen without will, everything is very green, everything is very lively, everything is very healing. So this is the point where the matter dissolved into the mere perception, and you just let it all dissolve, and there your body boundaries dissolves. You can't explain, let alone noting, and whether primary object to other objects, your body or external, everything become just one slurry that is called the flux, the continuity. So if you can observe it without labeling, no tension, but quite boring, it's quite monotonous, it's quite sleeping, sloth and torpor, and you feel like get up and go. That is the part we call defiance. If you are go prepared, not let the defilements or sets in, you will be fully alert and you understand whenever the defilements are there in the mind, mind is alert. When there is no defilement, mind becomes slimy. Mind becomes sloth and torpor. So not only meditation, if meditation is happening, how can you facilitate it? How can you go prepared? It's never happen overnight. It has to happen 1001 times. And the next day when you go prepared, you can predict. So you can master the situation. So you can season the situation. So you can just dissolve into. What is dissolving is the frustration, the tension, the disappointments, inferiority. Everything dissolves. So therefore there is a kind of a transition, kind of a evolution. You never believe such a quick one in your meditative life. Because you always underestimate you. But the meditation is so fast. It can happen within few minutes or few sessions or few days time. So two sessions before when I listened to Pandita Sayadaw at Panditaram, he says, whenever the mind will start to gather the momentum, you can't believe the momentum it is assuming. It should go beyond the human capacity. Unbelievable, that's why you must have a certain amount of faith. You must have a certain amount of precepts. You must have a certain amount of preparedness for these kind of changes. And you can go into the boundless world and again come back to the boundaries. And again go into the boundless boundaries. So you become an amphibian. You can live in water as well as in the dry land. So this amphibian is in the tadpole, Gemba. At the early, a fish-like life. And then they start external lungs. And then once they dissolve and when the tail end disappears, it becomes of the dryland animal, still live in the water. This change happens within the womb. We are developing like a fish. And then only we become human being where we can live in the air. So likewise in the meditation, going and coming back, it's a fast evolution. And you can accommodate it, if you can facilitate it, the emerging person is not the same person. You are completely reshuffled. You go to the flux and come back, assume your personality. Again, go into the flux and come back and assume personality. Ultimately, you find this personality you assumed is the utter imagination. Our second nature is the what that is completely dissolved. We are completely same person. Physically, we are different. Mentally, completely the same mind. So, they you assume it, you become human. Otherwise, you are in sectarianism. Otherwise, you are in separation. Economically, or caste-wise, or spiritually, whatever it may be, it's a sickness in the mind. So there it goes and says, everyone is equal. No boundary between me and not me. Whenever necessary, I can come back and live with these boundaries. So this liberation is not the liberation what the Buddha is talking, but it is only possible for human beings, only possible for spiritual beings. But some people consider it as a devastation. So they go for the bipolar disease, oxysophrenia, and ultimately they go to the psychiatrist. Unlucky enough, all the psychiatrists are mad people. Sorry. No one goes to the Buddha. So when if you have really, really ready for your interviews, ready to expose yourself, so we can sort it out. But your egotistic love, your love to this body and the other physical material will slowly, slowly dissolve, but it's also never happened overnight. This is a very good sign about it is started. It is a matter of your facilitating. It's a matter of your outlook. How can you nurture it? How can you facilitate it? We have the equal qualifications to facilitate it. Only the outlook, only the view, whether that is changeable or not, is a complete new issue. These evidences are there. So if you let it happen again and again, definitely you will be better off. Specifically with respect to tension and frustration. So we'll go to the third part.
Spiritual life. I have a good friend with whom I travel the path. We go to monasteries and meditation centers. We can both see the benefit from this, like practicing together and learning from each other. But there are also times where we argue and fight. My friend is from the opposite sex, which also complicates things. Sometimes we both think it may be better to keep more distance or even walk the path alone.
So this is why, so when you are doing counseling, the female problem will be well answered by a male. Male questions are well answered by females. If you wish to have a massaging, a male will do a very nice massaging for a female. A female can do a very nice massaging for a male. So this is the way they are happening each other. But in countries like in Sri Lanka, it is being completely looked from the different viewpoint, cross-eyed.
Looking cross-eyed.
In the West, they don't care. So we look at the Westerners also from the cross-eyed. So it's a big taboo in Sri Lanka, if to live together or kind of thing. Of course, in Colombo, it is not much of an issue, but at village level. So in the West, it is not a problem. So therefore, when you are traveling and meditating, I mean, I was in Panditarama, it's a hell of a problem. So they get, they mutually understand while traveling on the plane and come and register in the retreat. And one girl got pregnant. So now the question, where was the pregnancy started? Before coming or after coming? So Sayada was without a clue. They are living together and working together and no one knows. So therefore it is a cultural difference in the East and the West. So therefore that one day Christopher Hampshire came to Panditarama. And I was after 2 years and he came and I was little familiar with Burmese language. So Sayada asked me, there's no translator. Sayada asked me, just let them know that you have finished the Vipassana course and about to go for Metta Bhavana. And he is complaining, don't teach Metta Bhavana to the Westerners. Because they misunderstand it. They take it from the affectionate point of view. So Sayada told, I am not teaching. I am teaching pure Vipassana. But after that, I am of course teaching. And he gave me as an example. So I was explaining him. And then Christopher Hampshire made a very grave statement. He told Bhante, we British people conquered your country and destroyed. I ask for pardon. You are the spiritual beings. We are economically powerful. We have weapons and we have economy. So now I apologize in front of you. Please, please come to UK and we have put up a very new building. We are going to start a meditation season. So I had to point blank told I am not coming. Then he's asking Bhante, with all respect I am asking, to inaugurate the season. No. Then Sayada asked me to tell, if I go there and tell separate male and female, you don't like. You wanted to sit together. So you go to Sri Lanka and you can see monks, nuns and males and females. They are naturally separate. So I can't teach you these things to you. So therefore I am not coming. So it was a huge, the communicational and cultural gap. Because Sayada was Burmese and in Burma, it's still that traditions are there. So when the meditators are close to each other, of course you can share. Of course you can mutually benefit it. But complications also can happen. So in Asiatic countries we separate them. But I know in the West, it's a bad trait to separate out and give the equal kind of a consideration. So in meditation centers, we are in trouble. If anything going to happen, we feel like answerable, but of course they don't expect that kind of thing. So it is advised to be unto yourself. I know this situation is not both here. Maybe one part is here and that is the one, that person may be the writing. So in there is a Oedipus complex. The attraction is there for the opposite sex. So it is invaded in the meditation centers also. So Asiatic countries, not to expect that kind of thing, we separate them out, and it is very difficult for the Western mind to understand. So when I go out, I never take any responsibility about the organization. I ask the retreat organizer to do as you like. But when we come here, the local organizers, they take care. So I am in the safe land. I am not much worried about that, but I have to tell this people outside always very, very observant. So better to keep up to yourself. And if at all you are associating, best to have the same kind of a sex than opposite sex. Then other people will look at in a cross-type way. So it is a kind of involved kind of interpretation that I am giving. I know I am asking for trouble. Never mind. But in the meditation, you must be here, now I am. No second person. No second person. Don't have any kind of a thing. Disadvantages are much, much, much than advantages. I am telling from the safety point of view. So be unto yourself.
Third question. Most respected Venerable Bhante, this is my experience on walking meditation. During initial practices, I focused my attention on keeping feet forward, i.e. on the feeling of mat touching ball, arch and toes of each foot. The awareness of lifting the back leg off the mat came easily. Later, I was able to shift that focus onto placing the feet in front. I mentally counted 1, 2, 3, or ball, arch, toes, while placing each foot in front. I also had my eyes on the foot to have better focus, though it brought discomfort to the neck. I was aware of the sounds around, the movement of others, or sounds of monkeys, insects outside were not disturbing. I was able to just leave them as I heard and move to the next step. However, sound of a TV or radio or an electronic gadget were disturbing. This could be due to my personal trait, and I felt annoyance. Then I stopped walking and tried to start again from standing posture. There were instances when I felt floaty-like, or as if I was pushed forward for a second, and also a few instances where I felt a bit unbalanced. I tried to observe the same feeling in the next step, but they didn't exist then. I achieved better focus today morning while focusing on lifting the leg or feet being mid-air and placing the ball, arch, toes on ground while mentally counting up 1, 2, 3. Thoughts came by which were related to the retreat. Example, writing this. I told myself not to think and just walk. While walking outside the sand, I could pay better attention and also feel the difference of sand on the shady side and side exposed to sun. There were many thoughts passing by. It was easier to notice and they did not linger long when compared to sitting meditation. Most thoughts are forgotten as soon as they are gone. Please guide my meditation practice with metta.
So in the early part, to bind your mind or to bring mind at home, you note left, right, left, right. But still if you find mind is bewildered and not obedient enough, then you can still increase the 2 noting per 1 foot, lifting, dropping. Lifting, dropping. And still if you need rejuvenation, guiding, you can say lifting, moving, dropping. Lifting, moving, dropping. So that means 1 step into 3 notings. So likewise you can see the heel, arch and the toes, 1, 2, 3. So this is the way you bring the attention, the of the mind to the food. Whenever the mind become accustomed, whenever mind feel at home, try to do it without noting, as one of the early letters it mentioned, after a while noting become a nuisance. Otherwise you will keep on nodding and ultimately you have no chance to experience it. You are just regimenting. So see the possibility to do away with this nodding, labeling, and just let it and see how many steps you can walk without labeling. And the second thing is, don't look at your legs. It is too sharp. Look at somewhere 2 meters ahead. So you have to feel it rather than seeing. And then you let the body to walk and try to experience it. So it is the way you can only observe yourself as a third person looking at it. And that is the point you can see the effortless walking is happening. You can see the process. I'm not sitting. I'm walking. And there you can understand more details than detailed noting. And here I would say it's too much addicted to too much noting, so there are less chances you to get the sap of the Dhamma, the juice of it. So just let the body to walk. So whenever you are walking in the same path, in the same time, again and again the familiarization will give this chance. And there you can see the body knows. We call it the body knowledge. At the beginning only you give the directions, left, right, lifting, dropping, lifting, moving, dropping, like. And soon, once it becomes obedient, just try to do away with that. There you can see the walking is much a pacemaker between the active life and complete sitting meditation, in between. Sitting is doing nothing and observing. Walking is doing one thing at a time and observing. And eyes are open, body is working, and let the body to walk. And ultimately you can see, you are walking and you yourself is observing. And there you get a kind of a distance from yourself, observation. And then only, or only then, you can observe yourself while brushing your teeth at the morning, while washing your dishes after the meal, and while eating, while bathing. So, the walking meditation is the harmony between this daily life and the sitting. So, this is a good enough information, but refine it with 2 methods that I mentioned. Do away as much as possible, labeling and noting, whenever the meditation is mature enough. Don't bend your legs, head to see the legs, then it will be uncomfortable. Just look 2 meters about ahead of, or you are, if you are 5 feet tall, just look at somewhere around 5 feet. So these are the two things I wish to mention.
Dhamma question. Venerable Sir, in the Nivane Nivima discussions, you mentioned the word Gojaya as something reached via meditation. Can you kindly explain what is meant by it? Thiruvan Saranai.
So it is called the flux. When your primary object is dissolved, when your primary object loses its boundaries, you feel the far away sounds are there, thoughts are there, they are not train thoughts, they are not chain thoughts, bits and pieces of thoughts are there, and you feel the pain, but it is not unbearable. That indicates you are just living. Primary object also there, others are there, everything is in a mix or salad or flux. And that is what we call in Sinhala Gojaya, or the literal language is, it is called santati. Santati, the flux. And there everything become nothing. So things loses its identity. Everything dissolved into the same flux. As if all the rivers come and emptied into the ocean. At the ocean, you can't make out the different waters. Soon as it enters into the sea, you may. But at the sea, you can't. So likewise, identity of each and every individual object, that's called intrinsic characteristic, personal characteristics, its specific characteristic dissolves, and that is the point you see common character. Common character is changing nature. The changing nature is like a frothing pot. Everything is bubbling, frothing. So you see the surface of the pot, it's bubbling, is called the flux. Is called Gojaya.
Final question on Dhamma. Which is the difference between needs and desires, and by whom are they perceived?
needs and
desires.
So it is the utility and luxuries. The utility is the need and the desire is leading to luxury. The person who do not know the difference called putujjana, the commoner. The person who knows the utility and not trespassing into the luxury called Aryapuggala or noble people. So it's very difficult because multinational companies are erasing the boundary. They are making the utility into luxuries. And they say yes, now America do not know the boundary. Europe do not know the boundary. The day the China is going to lose the boundary, world will collapse. So much of consumerization. It is now happening. It's another big nation losing the boundary. Utility and luxury, they do not know. So basic thing is to be frugal, to utility value, and don't go for the sake of consumerization. And that is a conspiracy done by the multinational, multi-billion companies. And go, don't get succumbed to the situation. Just see how we use food in the retreat. Someone is cooking, we are just eating and meditating. Just see our beddings. It is not a luxury. It's not princely. Just suitable enough for the retreat. And see our clothings. We just to hide the unwanted part and to prevent from the sun and the rain. That's it. We are not in a beauty, fashion pagan. Send the medicine. Reduce as much as possible. Each and every medicine is a poison. The iatrogenic effect for that presently available on the earth, unbelievable. Almost 90% of the diseases are due to medicine. From the triple onward to the death, the medical science has encroached into your life. So you must know the food. Food must give the complete vitamins, immunity, nutrients. Don't go for anything artificial. So then we are fairly on utility and reduce the life to the utility value. Then the production of the earth is utterly enough to the humankind. But presently, 90% of the human population go to the bed without food. Meanwhile, other people throw parties, they brew alcohol using 40% of the grain. And they are fighting each other with cakes. They are fighting each other with tomatoes. Other people, they don't have to eat. So therefore, you have to think about the equal distribution of the property. And we individual, we have a responsibility. Whole world may be mad, but don't run mad. Just go for utility, but don't try to, self-mortification. Because we are doing a very important job. We must have energy. We must have enough exercise. So therefore, we have to give the body basic needs. Don't try to emphasize and go for self-mortification. And the Buddha has clearly indicated it. So therefore, whenever we are conducting a retreat, we are giving an example for the utility value. And each and every person offering food, are very few innocent people, very poor people. And they are not eating daily the same meal. They are eating very, very frugal food. Once a year they come and give maximum. Lucky enough, we have 365 donors, so we are eating the maximum throughout the year. But you must know the limit. The Buddha mentioned, Santaruttarvaramam bhikkave sadhitabham. Even if all the robes have been robbed or burnt, and if you have nothing to wear, and you cover the secret area, and go to a house and say, I am sorry, I am forced to ask something, please give me something to hide myself. They will give as much as possible clothing, but you must select only two enough, the upper robe and the lower robe. Don't accept too much. Even under such a dire, deep necessity, you must not even ask for three robes. You must ask only two of the robes. Because that people, when they get emotion, they give everything. But the receiver, you must have the controlling power. Otherwise, if you accept, you are answerable. So people come and offer to our monastery so much of things. It's a nuisance. We can't maintain it. We have our job. So we distribute as much as possible. So therefore, we say, please ask utility value and we will indicate. If it is not necessary, we will indicate. Just leave it there. But unlucky enough, in Sri Lanka, people are very happy to offer, do puja. And they are offering whatever they feel. Ultimately, we have so much of storerooms and so much of rats, so much of cats, so much of dogs, so much of nuisance because of this unwanted thing. So therefore, at home, you may have certain amount of economic limitations, but even then, try to come back to the utility value and the need and the desire. Desire never can be satisfied, but the utility need easily. Easily we can by contentment. Try to be contented. And then we are the kings on the earth. We live in a very happy life and we take care about our mental and physical health. And we mind our own business rather than helping others and other contracts. So yogic life is not single cross-legged sitting and staying for 3 hours. We are answerable each and every material we are using. And we are setting a role model, even after our death, this role model will be the remaining. So we have to understand not the here and now, fulfilling your senses, but is the example you are leaving behind. That is how the Theravada, the senior monks, are living. So they are setting an example. We are following the same and follow the suit. That's all questions.
Those are the written questions, so we can open up now.
Yeah, about almost 1 hour we have taken, but anyway, if someone is having any question to the audience, we can take a few minutes.
Venerable, I have a question regarding walking meditation.
Yeah.
I did it not so much in the past, but I did a lot of sitting meditation daily. And once I reached pity and sukha, the first two absorptions, is it also possible with walking meditation?
Possible means that, please repeat the last part of your question.
Is it also possible, it was not easy to get
sitting
to the absorptions. And walking meditation is very, for me, I have lots of will into it. So is it getting easier after 2-3 years or?
No, I would give this kind of an answer. At the beginning of the retreat, we say, this is not for absorption. This is not the concentration. This is just to have mindfulness. Mindfulness can lead to 2 ways, insight way and concentration way. And mindfulness in sitting leads to concentration. Mindfulness is walking is lead to more insight. It's a dynamic thing. But it is a necessity as far as the exercises are concerned to balance you. So therefore, walking meditation is a warming up process before the event of the athletics. So when you warm up, and then you can sit and wait for a long time. In the sitting meditation, you may fulfill this absorption and concentration and kind of thing. Even then, we define in this retreat, that is not our final aim. Final aim to be aware, be mindful. We call still reduce to bare attention. So if you can understand experience of sitting and walking, you get 100% marks. What's the difference between sitting and walking meditation for your experience? If I had to put a counter question.
For me, the difference is, in sitting meditation, I have no movement with the body, so I can let go easier. Walking meditation to me is in the middle in between daily life and walking meditation, so that I can keep my mindfulness even outside the retreat. When I'm going, walking, taking a shower, when it's getting loud outside or a lot of noises, and then I can stay focused. That's for me actually at the moment thing with walking meditation.
Good. And when you are sitting, how do you know whether you are mindful or not?
When I'm sitting meditation and I'm not into the jhanas, and I am actually complete in the moment and still have all the input through our senses, can let them be, just watching it, this would be for me in the sitting meditation, the mindfulness.
How do you know it's a hallucination or reality?
I hope that's not philosophical.
No, how do you know it's a mind-made or reality? Tangible or intangible? Verifiable or unverifiable?
If the input of the senses are getting, I don't know if I find the word, down or less, and thinking comes in, and then I know, oh, okay, something is happening, it's shifting to thinking. And thinking is always like illusions.
Yeah. So that is the concept and reality, no mark, no border. So in walking, concept is completely far away from reality. Because you are doing something and your impact on the leg to the ground is verifiable. But in sitting, it is a little difficult unless otherwise you feel the touch at the nostril or on top of the lip or your buttocks are touching or your expansion and contraction to your clothing. They are subtle, but utterly passive. In walking, partly it is active, partly passive. So therefore, mindfulness is active and passive part and mindfulness is completely passive part. It's the exercise here, not the absorption, not the concentration. And this is to be mindful. And then only you can expand it to the brushing your teeth, eating, drinking, and then can go to the multitasking. So therefore, walking is a pacemaker. And I went to the prison and I gave meditation. I gave 50% walking and 50% sitting. They told, but they early also we used to sit and meditate, but our mind is brooding about the past crimes we have done. So we disqualify ourselves as a meditators. Soon I close eyes and kind of thing, the frustration and disappointment of the past happens. So therefore, whatever the way you instruct, we think we are not meant for meditation. But in walking one day, I can feel left leg and immediately the attention go to the right leg and then again to the left leg. After four consecutive left and right, I know I am mindful. I start crying. It's verifiable. Even I am a criminal, I can be mindful. So that means you can wash and dry. You can clean yourself. But when you close eyes, your mental configuration is always put down to the past. But therefore, in walking, you are open-eyed, you can feel. So therefore, wherever the mind situation, you can get the touch, you can get the plug into the situation. So when we are teaching young children, hardly they can sit and meditate. Whenever we introduce walking meditation, they are like angels. At the beginning, they start shouting, jumping up and down. 5 minutes of walking meditation, the teachers ask, what is the kind of magic bante you are doing to children? They become so obedient. After that, they come and sit. And even their parents become envious. How the children can become so tame? Because the secret is in walking meditation. And we in Sri Lanka, we have 2 projects. One thing is our mindful school. There's another project by Goenka system. Just like Dhamma friends. And it's also done by one of my friends. I told you are utter failure because you are not doing walking meditation. I know I am a success because we do walking at least 50% at least before sitting. So therefore, I am with so much of confidence. Even if you are a criminal, even if you are a child, even if you are a non-Buddhist, the walking meditation is the fact. And Sri Lanka, unlucky enough, no walking meditation paths. The meditation centers, they are not emphasizing it. So people become sick and they are chasing bad concentration. And walking meditation, they don't care. And now we have a project to teach walking meditation to the monks. Not a single monk ever heard about walking meditation. They are the teachers of the world Buddhism. So they are sick. More than 50% of the monks are with diabetes. More than 50% with cholesterol. No exercises. They live, of course, sitting even. Whenever you introduce, it becomes so healthy. So answer is, it is developing a dynamic kind of mindfulness, sitting developing kind of the passive kind of mindfulness. It is sitting is for the concentration and walking is for energy, the vigilance and diligence. So you can apply easily that to the day-to-day activities. So take care.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we are going to have about 50 minutes for the walking meditation. After that 50 minutes, we'll be coming here for another sitting, group sitting. So this is the end of the question and answers here. Thank you very much for your participation.